Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us on this one. My name, of course, is still Paul Madat. Today, I have Dave Dubbin. He is Senior Vice President of Sales at Sotheby's International. Dave, in Toronto, man, how have you been, man?
I've been great. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. And it's great to reconnect after, I think we decided it was about a decade.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Lots happened, that's for sure. But things are good overall?
Oh, it's great. Going here into the spring into the summer and starting to enjoy some time outdoors. And it feels like I just love the energy of this time of year too. And it also coincides with our business. There's usually a bit of a pickup in the number of transactions and people looking at this time of year. So overall, it's a good time, good energy.
I love it. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you being here. Good to reconnect with you. Do me a favor, say hi to everybody, provide a quick intro for those that you haven't met yet, and we'll jump into it.
Hi, everyone. Dave Dubbin. I've been in real estate for about a decade now. Prior to that, Paul and I met my time in the Fortune 500 space doing sales. And before that, I had a career as a professional water skier, stunt performer, actor. I worked in theme park live action type shows all over the world. And, got to live in Australia for 3 years and do my MBA while I was there, and did it locally here too in Toronto and Canada.
Well, listen, Dave, we were talking before I hit record about the premise of my podcast, and I call it Your Intention Matters because that's pretty much the result you'll tend to get. When you're fired up about something, you're going to go all in, even in the absence of having any real evidence you can do it. And when you're kind of like, 50-50 on it, that's pretty much the result you get as well. And so I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. You ready to go?
Absolutely.
All right, good. So let's go back in time. Let's go back to maybe 20 years. Let's go back to Brock University, St. Catharines. I saw on your LinkedIn profile, sports management, circa 2004, Y2K's past us and so on. And so, Dave, if you think back to your time in college, university, and kind of getting out there, did you have a plan? Did you have a thought? Was it, this is what I want to do? Or was it, let me go to school and figure it out, and we'll just kind of go from there. Like, where were you at 20 years ago?
So let me just take a little step further back into, as part of the group that had OEC, graduated high school in 2000, and, just trying to figure out what I did, what I wanted to do, had more interest in the business side, but loved sports, wasn't really sure, whether I wanted to be a gym teacher, go into coaching somehow. You sort of hear about sports agents, but not really knowing what I wanted to do. And actually, my first year, I went to Acadia University for kinesiology and, kind of wanted, being, 19 at the time, looking for a bit of an adventure, going out east, had a lot of people I'd known that had gone to Acadia, went there, and, it wasn't really the right fit for me. It was a bit too small coming from Toronto. I think if it had been somewhere like Dalhousie, I would have enjoyed it a bit more. But I took a sport management course, and I was like, I didn't even know this existed. This was an option. And at the time, I think there was Brock and maybe Laurentian had a program too, but like Brock was the only one that had like a bachelor of sports management. So I ended up transferring there for the last 3 years and just loved it because I was working at the time in my summers, teaching water skiing, running water ski schools and doing shows. So I could take what I was learning and actually apply it in a practical sense. And it was a great mix of the, being in sports and combining it with business.
And so, Dave, you mentioned in your intro that you delved into the water skiing realm, so to speak, and you were a professional water skier. Did you do that like post-college right away, or was that your full-time gig, or did you transition differently?
So I started getting paid to teach water skiing when I was about 15, 16, and would coach in the summers and run water ski schools. And then at night do shows. So I wasn't in competitions per se, where like who can jump the furthest or go through the slalom course the fastest. It was putting on a production where, as an athlete, you have to be able to, you know, barefoot, do a pyramid, freestyle jump, wakeboard, sky ski, drive a boat, drive a jet ski. I basically got paid to play with and put on a show. And then when we got to stage, you had to learn to be able to carry yourself, advance the storyline. And you know, one of the biggest things that I learned through the process was to move with purpose, which I think really coincides with the theme of your podcast. Is if you're going to do it, you have to do it right. And when you move with purpose, it's very, you know, in reality, I'm trying to sell the story to the audience, right? That I'm this character, that this is happening, and how we're going to advance the storyline. And for me to sort of, you know, drag my feet through it, it doesn't come across that you're a hero if you're doing that. Now, if that's what your character calls for, then, you know, you take on those traits, but you really have to put some thought and move with purpose, because that's confidence, and that's what the audience really resonates with.
And so here in Canada, Dave, where were you on tour? Was it mostly Toronto Lakes and Ontario, or were you across the country?
It was mainly up in sort of Muskoka, Kawarth area. Mm-hmm. We do shows throughout Ontario. After I came back and sort of wound down my career, the water ski show at the CNE at the X opened up again. And did that as well. So,
and so how did Australia come about? Did they find you? Did you raise your hand because of the climate in Canada? You can't do it 12 months of the year. Like, how did that happen?
I was always felt like I wanted to go, you know, part of that, I guess, looking for the adventure thing. I'd worked with a bunch of Australians here in Canada who would do the endless summer thing. They do their summer there and then come here. And so I had a bunch of contacts, and I remember even being in high school and wanting to go there. So I said to myself, you know, I got to finish my undergrad and then go. And I remember there was a show in downtown Sydney in Darling Harbour, and just saw it online, saw the website. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of information out there, but basically cold called them and said, hey, I'm going to be down there. This is what I'm doing. This is what I can do. I said, sure, meet us up here and we'll do a bit of an audition sort of thing. And, you know, got that gig. And during my time down there, I decided that I wanted to further my education, and, you know, Australia was going to be the best place to do my MBA.
And how old were you roughly?
Mid-20s.
Mid-20s, so, okay.
Yeah.
Any pushback from mom and dad about going so far?
My dad told me that... not to fall in love and marry an Australian girl, because my mom would be on a plane half the year, and that he couldn't handle. And I'm like, yeah, I love you too, Dad. I'll miss you. But yeah, I understand.
And how long were you in Australia?
Total is about, it's about 3 years. So
three years year round?
Yeah, year round. I did come back a few times, tried to either make it around the holidays or for our summer to get that sort of endless summer. But where I was on the Gold Coast in Surfers Paradise, which probably equivalent to like Florida weather. You know, if you're coming from Toronto, it's really nice year round.
Well, you know, Dave, you know, we're talking, you even mentioned in our intro that we've known each other for a long time, even though it's been several years since we last connected. You know, I've been very fortunate with what I do for a living, where I've been able to travel a lot to a lot of different places, you know, stateside, Europe, and so on. And the one place that while I do some work with some companies in Australia right now, it's virtually Zoom and WebEx and so on. I've actually never been there, and it's definitely a bucket list item for me. And if you think back to your transition from Canada to Australia, same language, you know, monarchy kind of driven a little bit, things like that. Was your transition to Australia pretty seamless? Did you have any, like, what am I doing here moments and I got to get out of here? Like, what was that like for you?
After I was in Australia, I actually was in Germany for 2 years. So I kind of wrapped the two in a story together, and it's, I encourage anybody who has the opportunity in their 20s to go live on another continent, because you have to figure out, hey, like, if I want to have a social circle, I got to make friends. Even going to the grocery store is an adventure, right? Like, try to buy milk. It's not 2% or 1% there. It's they do it the other way. It's like 99% fat free. And so it's just totally new brands, different things. You're driving on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
And they're speaking English, but it's, you know, it's like in Canada, if you speak to someone, listen to someone speak from Alberta to someone from Newfoundland, you're going, okay, this is English, but I don't understand all the slang and that. So you got to figure that out. And then, you know, jumping over to Germany where it's a different language and I'm trying to buy milk and I'm looking around and I'm like, okay, everyone's going for this one. I'm going to go for this one. And yeah, you put it on the cereal and I to this day, I have no idea what it was, but it was like, I think some sort of like eggnog type thing that was just, I'm like, okay, lesson learned. That's not the one. We'll go on the next one. So you really have to sort of put yourself out there, trial and error, and it forces you to jump in the deep end, which I think is a great experience.
And so 5 years away, 3 in Australia, 2 in Germany consecutively.
Yeah. Germany was 2 contracts. So I came back to Toronto in between. But over a 5-year span there, but yeah, coming right back here. So.
And so all in, when you even consider your years in Canada, you know, in that industry as a professional water skier, putting on shows and so on. How many years was that roughly?
I probably did it for
post-Brock.
Yeah. Post-Brock I probably did it for about 8-10 years.
That's a long time, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's a career in itself right there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Dave, I'm curious about, you know, you being an athlete really for a living for a long time and the period where you realized, okay, so I can't be an athlete forever. I mean, Father Time catches up and
yes,
whether you're playing hockey or basketball or volleyball or whatever, like just it's going to end. And so that moment when you realize, okay, that's it for me. This is the last time I put the skis on professionally. Was that like a letdown moment? Was a I'm excited about what's next moment? Like, what was that like for you?
I had made the decision after my first year in Germany that I wanted to make a transition because I think I was probably 27, 28 at the time. I just completed an NBA previously. I decided to go to Germany because I said, hey, listen, I was working for Warner Brothers in Australia and they offered to sponsor me and I could have stayed, but I was also presented with the opportunity to go to Germany. And I was like, I don't know if I'll ever have the chance to live in Europe again, you know, with minimal responsibilities being tied down with anything. So I decided to do that. And I was like, the deal I made with myself is I'll do it for 1 year and then I'll go back to Toronto and I'll, you know, give that a chance. So I wrapped up the season there, I think in September 2008, and came back to an economy that was not doing so great. And you know, I took what I'd learned before about, hey, I think I'm marketing, sales, I think this is where I want to be. And so I was cold calling companies, I was trying to network with people, and was getting a great response. People are like, hey, love your story, love your experience. We got to go lay off 100 people, but you know, call me again, just keep calling me and, you know, call me once a month and we'll check in. So I was trying to do that. And then I actually got the phone call and asked to go back over to Germany to fill in, there'd been an injury or a spot open up. So I ended up going to do that. So it was kind of baby steps. And then, when I did make the full transition into sales, I was still doing shows here, you know, would get asked to come in and do some shows and, I guess slowly wind down.
And out so, of
it. So it wasn't a full, like, you know, I knew this was going to be my last day. This was everything. I knew there was, it was always going to be there. And, you know, there's still times where I think about it. I'm like, you know, if I go and train, I can do it.
And so you eased out of it versus just that one final show. Okay, my sayonara, see you, where you go. And you kind of eased into it a little bit, it sounds like.
I did, because I didn't really have a true vision in mind of where I was going to go and what I was going to do. I knew my concentration in my MBA was in marketing, and I liked that. I liked the creative side of it. I'd done some sales, and I liked that too, but it was a whole new world to me. So I didn't know. I'm like, I don't know what brand of milk to buy here. So let me go and try and figure it out, which is the best way.
So post skiing back here in Canada, What was your first professional sales role? Where were you?
While I was looking for roles, I actually, I did a year of retail sales, selling cameras for a Canadian company called Henry Cameras. Photography had always been a passion of mine. You know, it was proudly published because I used to take photos of us water skiing and stuff like that. I ended up some magazines. And I was in there one day and just talking with them, and they're like, "Hey, just, you know, if you're looking for a part-time gig while you're applying to other stuff, why don't you put your resume in here?" And did that. And I, looking back on it, the amount of sales I did with, did there, it was a great kickstart to be able to do that frequency and learn and interact with so many people and different personality types. I really, anybody who is, who has retail experience, you know, I place that pretty in pretty high regard.
And when did you transition from retail to outbound sales?
I switched over. I started over at Xerox. It was probably about a year.
Okay. Where did you work at Xerox?
I was at one of the agencies. I was at Butterfly.
Oh my God, you're at Butterfly.
Yeah.
All right. So were you with Stangetta and Roberts, and were they all gone by then? I'm trying to think the timeline.
The Brennans were.
Brennans.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Stephen and Colin. All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And so your time at Xerox, because my first jump into outbound sales was Xerox as well.
Yeah.
And so now I joined DBS, one of the agencies, back in 2002.
Yeah.
But I didn't know anything about Xerox. I didn't know anything about sales. I hadn't done retail sales before. I was out of work. I have a background in economics. Like, I was in credit, and I was in that space, but I needed a job. And I jumped into Xerox. I didn't know anything about their training. I didn't know how well regarded it was. Like, I needed some work. I was 100% commission, as I presume maybe you were as well, at Butterfly. And so that first year for me, I ended up working at Xerox for almost 10 years. But that first year in particular, that first 6-8 months, man, Dave, I must have mentally quit half a dozen times. I couldn't figure it out. I was in early. I was out late. You know what what life was like at Xerox? It was feet on the street, pound the pavement. And
how old were you at the time?
I was 28.
Okay. So I was about the same age. I think I was like 29, maybe turning 30.
Yeah.
And you sort of have a little bit more perspective where it's like, if you're coming out of school, you're just like, oh yeah, this is what I need to do. Kind of like blinders on. But being a little bit older, I was like, I do not like this. This is crazy, but I'm learning a lot. I'm becoming successful at this. It was almost like a boot camp, and in terms of like train you up and jump in the deep end, and you know, we're going to put you in front of clients, live deals, and wow, the experience of doing that and just sort of really solidifying the base of how to be a successful salesperson is unbelievable. I'll meet clients now and like, you know, I'll talk to them and they're like, "Oh, you worked at Xerox?" Mm. And it's generally an older generation, but it's, "Oh, wow." So,
yeah, it's the same thing I experienced as well. Now, how long were you at Xerox for?
It was about a year.
About a year. So, okay. All right. Yeah, your time at Xerox was not as long as mine was, but I mean, it was the best decision I made to work there. And it was the best decision when I decided to move on as well. It was just, I'd reached my max and I wanted to do something different and had a passion for training and so on. And so your decision to leave Xerox, not quite a decade, but about a year or so, was that yours? Did somebody find you? Were you kind of looking? Like, what was that like?
I think, I can't remember when I first had someone reach out from being there, but I think because I had been to business school, I was a little bit older. You know, being a professional athlete is ticks a lot of boxes in terms of like what recruiters are looking for.
Yeah.
So I think it was at the 6-month mark, I started had people reaching out, and, you know, similar to my time at when I went to Acadia, and you know, initially I didn't think it was the right fit, but I said, you know, I'm going to do this for a year and see how it goes. And then, I can't remember if ADP came knocking or if, I knew someone there or something like that, but it's, I ended up going over there and, jumping into the world of payroll and HR.
Well, that's when you and I actually met, because I have a friendship and a relationship with Mike Roberts.
Yeah.
And I know that you were with Mike as well, or in dotted line or something. But did you interview with Mike at the time when he was VP of sales?
No, I had been in major accounts and he had taken over.
Okay. So you were already there before Mike.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to ask you if whether or not Mike working at Butterfly, factored into the interview process, but he wasn't even there yet.
No, I remember when he came in, I think we had met at, one of these events that Xerox had put on before. So, we sort of got to reconnect after having met for like 10 minutes before at an event.
All right. So Dave, what I'm really curious about is when you think about ADP and Xerox, two global giants respectively within their own field and their own industries, but when you work for ADP Direct versus a Xerox agency, it's a very different setup. Like you have the power of the two brands behind you, but I'm assuming at ADP you had a base, you had a different type of account to cover, different support internally, different value props. But was that a good transition for you from agency life into more of a direct sales channel?
Yes and no. Mm. It was what I thought I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to, I was even considering going into the bank. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, I went to business school. I got put on the suit every day and go like, I like this sales thing. I think being in the ADP direct world or, the Fortune 500 direct world or one of these big banks is where I see myself doing it. And then actually doing it, I discovered that, probably that longing for a sense of adventure was a better fit in a small business or becoming an entrepreneur. Being in the perception that I had control over things, like it's harder when you're in a big organization to maybe get a deal done. And it's not that the person you're selling to doesn't want to do it. It's just navigating their back end, our back end, you've got implementation and just trying to coordinate it. We're redoing our servers this year. So let's push it. Like there's a lot of moving parts, the bigger the ship. And so I actually, started thinking about real estate and went back to my time in retail saying, hey, actually, did some self-evaluation. I think I actually enjoy working B2C more than I do B2B. And so that was sort of the push towards real estate.
I'm fascinated by this because when I think about, and so where'd you go into real estate, by the way?
Royal LePage.
So residential?
Residential, yeah.
Okay, all right. So you're at Xerox, which is a global brand within their own industry. But the offering, as we would know, oftentimes could be considered commoditized. Okay. Yeah. You get to ADP, massive global giant as well in terms of their presence, but their services could also be highly competitive and commoditized as well in terms of payroll and accounting and so on. Then you get into Royal LePage, you're in residential. My God, in the city of Toronto, there must be, it feels like 500,000 real estate agents out there. I mean, and yet you're still working for Royal LePage, which is one of, if not the largest in the world. I mean, talk to me about that transition.
Well, fortunately, I was be able to be exposed to some absolutely amazing sales training, including yours. And what really resonated with me is that, it's the relationship building that really gets the sales done and building the trust and being able to solve the solution. Having worked for two premium brands, you're probably on the price side, you're probably more expensive, but you're considered sort of the industry standard, right? So, doing that's a little bit different, but transitioning into Royal LePage, I mean, it's still building trust and building the rapport with the clients and seeing if you can find them the solution, which for me, that resonated a lot with my clients who would be in, work for Fortune 500 companies, work for the banks or have their own businesses. They really liked that approach to it. So I look at everything throughout my journey, whether it's how I learned to move while I was standing on stage or figure out how to navigate a grocery store in Germany as an educational piece that I put in, and I'm always trying to learn. So, and implement it. And then, you know, as you get older, it's often relearn.
You know, Dave, if there's any one industry that that I do a lot of work in today, it's real estate.
Yeah.
But it's more on the commercial real estate side. And yeah. one of the clients does include, you know, Royal LePage Commercial.
Yeah.
But we do a lot of work with most of the major commercial real estate companies. And while I don't have much experience, quite frankly, working with residential real estate brokers and agents, what I've learned in commercial real estate by being around that industry is a little bit is that everything is earned. Anybody that is crushing it in that space is earned. There is pretty much zero leads to anybody coming in at all. And in residential, as an outsider to me, it feels like the market can be really oversaturated. Anybody that just wants to get their license can get a license, can go get their real estate license today. And it just seems like there are a ton of signs everywhere, and some people have a better standing than others, but it just seems like it's a really saturated market. And so did you experience that when you were jumping into that arena as well?
I was fortunate. I think I had my first listing within 2 weeks.
No.
As I was going through the process, I was letting everybody I know, this is what I'm going to do. And it, a lot of it came, and my business still comes from, it's very referral based, and it comes from Sphere as well. So, you know, repeat clients too. And it's, that's the people who work with us, like know us, like us, trust us. And that can happen through an online lead, and we do advertise and stuff like that. But, to your point, I think there's over 70,000 agents in Toronto at the Toronto Real Estate Board. And I'd love to see how many of them claim to be number one.
We're all tied for first, right?
But I find it's, you know, it comes through the relationship, having met people or being referred to them. So it's a different approach that we take versus, you know, having the billboard out or having the bus stop sign.
And how long were you with Royal LePage, give or take?
I was there for about 6 years. Yeah.
That's a pretty long stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I keep me honest here, but I'm assuming the decision for you to move over to Sotheby's was yours just based on what I'm hearing from your career a little bit. And if it was, I don't imagine that was the easiest of decisions for you after 6 years at Royal LePage.
Yeah. It's, the logistics alone on moving, it's not easy. And I'd built a lot of relationships there. Like it's tough because most realtors work by themselves. So, you know, you do work in an office with maybe 100, 120 other agents, but everybody's working for themselves. And so, you know, you have these relationships with your coworkers, but it's still at the end of the day, you're on your own. You have some support from management, but still at the end of the day, you're operating your own business and it's on your own. So it was hard to say goodbye to some of the people, but I just looked at kind of where I want to take my business and the brand of Sotheby's kind of fit a little bit better for that.
You know, Dave, I want to ask you a question. When you think about 2020 and 2021 in particular, and those two calendar years and COVID, and the impact that COVID had globally on the world, outside of it impacting you personally, it's masks, staying home and things like that. How did it impact you professionally when governments around the world are saying, stay home, don't go out? And like people with a lot of uncertainty, if you think back to those 2 years about the markets and people being laid off and incomes. Yeah. And like, how did that impact you professionally with, hey, do you want to sell your house? No, I can't leave the house right now.
The number one word that pops into my head when you say that is, oh, we've got to pivot. We've got to pivot. For me, I had been doing, you know, when we put out a listing, we would always do professional photography, professional videos, floor plan, and 3D tours. And that's just that's how we would do it. We want to make sure we're doing everything the best we can to illustrate your property, because your number one showing is online. It's the first showing for everybody.
Right.
So we were doing all that. it just became a little bit more, I guess it became mainstream for everybody to look at doing that. I relied heavily on technology. My time in the Fortune 500 space taught me well to outsource to professionals that can help you. So, I was already using DocuSign, already had Zoom meetings and had met with clients on Zoom. So it was just upping the frequency of it rather than having to learn a whole new way of doing it.
Well, Dave, congrats on being able to pivot versus just sitting on the sidelines for a year or year and a half, taking a flyer with it. So good for you for staying relevant and modern to the current scenario. My wife and I'm very grateful. We have a few different properties that we own that we rent out. And I want to ask you about the rate hikes as of late, especially in the last year, because they've been like, as an owner of property, I'm beside myself at how the government has raised the hikes from 1.5, 2%. Like percentage wise, it's absurd to me that they've gone to like 6% versus 1%. From a percentage standpoint, okay, people can survive it. But when you think about the percentage income, I'm like beside myself over this at how much has gone up in a 12-month period. And you on the other side, I gotta think you're hearing that from potential clients. Do I buy now? Do I sell now? The market, the government's, the rates are not supportive right now. The house prices are all over the place. Like, how are you managing this? Or is it a non-factor which says, well, but we just have to pivot again and figure it out?
Everybody's story is different. Everybody's scenario is different. So it's really trying to find the solution for each one and whatever the market conditions are, trying to navigate it. I remember at the start of the pandemic, just going, okay, so we're basically going to press stop on the economy and see what happens. That terrified me. And then what I thought was going to happen didn't happen. It went the other way. Everything started to boom. I'm like, okay, I guess that's, when you stimulate the economy with this much money, this is what happens. So I feel, now it's where we're all paying for that pressing stop on the economy now with the higher interest rates, because you have to bring inflation back into check. I think I can't remember the stat off the top of my head, but it's, I think it's close to 40% of Canadians that own properties don't have mortgages.
Mm.
So it's, and then the ones that do have mortgages, it's only a percentage of them that actually have variable mortgages. So although it's gone up now and those on variable mortgages are really feeling it, some people that are locked in at a lower rate for, whether it's 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, they're not going to feel that until they have to renew the mortgage. So, if things come back down by then, it might not be an issue, but the biggest challenge we've been facing is low inventory. You combine that with adding a million people to the population here. I think we just crossed 40 million in Canada, and it's finding places. So that increase in demand has actually, helped some. In Toronto, helped prices and values see less of a correction and actually start to see a bit of an incline, depending on asset class.
So I was going to say, I thought what you just said that was very eloquent about the fixed rates versus variable. I'm very grateful that, for the properties that we rent out, they're fixed. But I'm concerned with, what's it going to look like in 2025 and 2026 as they start to come up for renewal and so on. So hopefully, to your point, maybe they come back and check a little bit more and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I mean, the factor with tenanted property is if there's turnover, and we've seen a big increase in rental prices too. So that might coincide with any increased cost you have too.
So Dave, talk to me about Sotheby's. Anybody who's not familiar with them as a brand, any core competency that you guys play in, or any type of area specifically, types of houses or properties or anything like that?
So the brand actually started, most people are aware of the auction house that started in 1744 in the UK. Through doing auctions, sort of a natural transition and to be selling estates and selling real estate. So they started doing real estate brokerages throughout the world. There's about, I think we're in about 80 plus countries. And, you know, it's pretty amazing to see the network of properties that we get to come across my desk through email of, you know, whether it be a castle in the UK or an island for sale in the Caribbean. It's associated with being luxury, but Sotheby's really, their core competency and their motto is more about luxury, is about service. It's not about price point. And so whether I'm selling an entry-level condo in Toronto, we do the same process and the same level of advertising as the $5 million property we have, or, you know, if it's a $50 million property. I haven't got one of those yet, but you know, it's the same process, and it's holding ourselves to the high standard and making sure that we're communicating with our clients and delivering them and showcasing their properties to the best of our abilities.
Well, you know, Dave, I really appreciate you freeing up the time. I mean, it's a great story. We start off college, Acadia, over to Brock.
Yeah.
You find sports management. You're like, this is a thing. I didn't even know this was a thing. And so here we are. And yeah. then you travel the world, water skiing in Australia and Germany, back and forth in Canada. And then you find yourself into sales at retail and then outside sales at Xerox and ADP and Royal LePage, like some massive brands in their space. You transition into real estate from technology sales and so on. And yeah. 6 years at Royal LePage. And then now, you know, call it 3 or 4 years at Sotheby's. And you battle a global pandemic and the way it impacts there. And so congratulations on all your success up until this point, man.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, you know, you can have a plan on where you think you're going to go, and, you know, life happens, I like to say, and you have to adapt to it. And it's, I do really, your message about moving with purpose and having a direction on where you're going really is one of the things that I pass on to my team and mention. But, you know, it's okay if that changes and it changes slightly, but, you know, evaluate the process and sort of, okay, the wind's blowing this way. Let's see what's yeah. in this direction.
I love it. Well, Dave, man, yeah. thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, everybody, let's wrap it up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. And Dave, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Take care.
Hey, everyone.